Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Well, today on the show, we're going to be talking about a very painful condition. It's called bursitis. And our physical therapists are back with us to talk about it and what you can do to alleviate it. In the studio with me today, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. Jill, good to see you again.
It's great to be here.
And Lori Tyne-Brody. Laura, good to see you as well.
Good to be here.
Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at the UW, and Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So, what helps you relieve pain from bursitis? What physical therapy questions do you have? I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill, let me start with you. What is bursitis?
Well, the bursa in our body are little fluid-filled sacs, and we have over 150 bursa in our body.
Oh.
I know, it's crazy. But what they do, or their purpose, is they're typically around joints or where muscles come in and insert onto a bone, and they provide some shock absorption, some cushion, some protection, if you will. And what can happen is they can become inflamed or irritated, and that's when people get bursitis. What happens is this fluid-filled sac can become inflamed and swollen. So you can get it a couple different ways. You can get it from having some sort of direct pressure right on the bursa. A classic one we see is in people's elbows. We call it student's elbow. When you rest on your elbows, when you do a lot of computer work or something like that, and you kind of create a friction, you can get what's called student's elbow. Another one you can get is you have a bursa that sits right on top of your kneecap. And you can get something called housemaid's knee, which comes from kneeling and scrubbing your kitchen floors. Or we see it in laborers who do a lot of kneeling, such as carpenters or plumbers. They can end up They can end up with bursitis from that direct pressure. Then you can also get bursitis if you have some sort of systemic condition. You're a little bit more prone to bursitis. So people with rheumatoid arthritis, for example, are a little bit more prone to bursitis. What happens is once this bursa gets inflamed is it can irritate the structures around it, such as the muscles. They become a little bit weaker. The joint becomes painful. If the bursa gets infected, you can have all sorts of issues. So bursitis is kind of a broad, all-encompassing term that can mean many different things.
A lot of different things,
exactly.
Yeah. And we don't, all 150 bursas or however,
150.
We don't get it in all of them.
No.
No, there are some that are more common, as Jill highlighted,
yeah.
the front of the knee and the elbow. Actually, the elbow wasn't as common until we started doing computer work.
Exactly.
The shoulder and the trochanteric bursa are the ones that I see most often, bursitis in the shoulder. Underneath the top of the shoulder bone up there, the acromial clavicular joint, there's the subacromial bursa sits there along with the rotator cuff tendon and the long head of the biceps tendon. It's a very small space. So when that bursa swells up, it can create that deep toothache kind of pain in your shoulder. And then we also commonly see it on the outside of the hip. People will say they have bursitis in their hip, and that's when you can put your finger right on that hip bone on the outside of your hip, and it's really tender. That's a trochanteric bursitis.
Yeah. Can we treat this at home?
So you can, first of all, you have to figure out why the bursa is irritated in the first place. So the example Lori gave in the shoulder, there's a very small amount of space for all those structures. And so if your shoulder mechanics aren't moving appropriately, that can be the reason why you get some pinching when you reach overhead. So seeing a physical therapist to kind of treat the underlying condition, kind of restoring the normal shoulder motion would be helpful. In the case of greater trochanteric bursitis, it's associated with obesity. And it can also be due to lifestyle factors. So if you sit with your legs crossed all day long, that's going to put more pressure on that bursa. So sometimes some lifestyle modifications can be helpful. If it's truly an inflammatory process, if it's truly a bursitis, then things like anti-inflammatory medications and icing may be helpful. But if you don't get to the root of the problem, why you got it in the first place, it's just going to continue coming back.
So you need to see...
Many times you need to see a physical therapist to see why the bursa became irritated in the first place.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, we have some callers with questions for you. I think that may relate to that. Russell in Beaver Dam has one for us. Let's go there. Hi, Russell.
Yes, yeah. Hi, I've come down and started Thanksgiving, and all of my joints, shoulder, elbow, hips, knees, hand joints, it got to the point where I could barely walk. Well, I did get down to the emergency room there, and they gave me some prednisone. They started me on 40 milligrams. And this really seemed to help out, but as time went on, I did get down. I'm down to 10 milligrams right now, but I have been to the doctor, inflamed blood, and they can't seem to pinpoint it. And now I got an appointment in Madison with Dr. Walsh May 16th. That's how long it's going to take to see this rheumatist, but I'm just wondering, maybe I got this bursitis.
Well, let's, Russell, thank you for calling. Let's, Jill, what do you think?
So,
start with you.
He could very, Russell, you could very well have inflammation of your bursa, but this sounds like it's a little bit more systemic. So, for you to have all these multiple joint complaints without kind of a mechanism of injury or anything like that, it sounds like you could have bursitis, but we still need to get to the underlying problem and see what kind of systemic condition it is.
Yeah, agreed. 40 milligrams of prednisone is a pretty high dosage, right. And it's good that they're tapering you down, but they need to get to the underlying cause, and seeing the rheumatologist would be the way to go. There are a number of different diseases in the rheumatologic family. Polymyalgia rheumatica comes to mind. So figuring out which of these it is and what the right course of treatment will be. You have an appointment in May. If I were you, I would continue to call the clinic politely on a regular basis to see if they have cancellations, because they often do have cancellations. And if you're retired and your schedule's flexible, sometimes they can get you in sooner.
Yeah, I've had that where they said, I said, hey, could you get me in any sooner? And they said, tell you what, we'll keep you
right
in mind, and we'll call you when
right.
if something opens
right.
up.
They'll keep a wait list, things like that.
Right.
So get on that wait list.
The other thing is to keep track of your symptoms as you're tapering off this prednisone and see how your symptoms wax and wane, so you have a really good history once you come in to see the physician, would also be very helpful, Russell.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Scott in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Scott.
Hi, I'm calling because my poor baby brother, who is pushing 50 now, is suffering from the long-term effects of a very severe ankle break many years ago. And as he's getting older, he's becoming more and more disabled by it. And I was just kind of wondering if you had any thoughts on whether it's too late for him to see improvement from trying to get into dedicated physical therapy, or, you know, if there's a surgical solution. He had, I think it was called a pilon fracture.
Oh, yeah.
And the surgeon described the X-ray as looking like cornflakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he has, you know, it's a big knob of hard tissue where his ankle used to be. And he has really at most probably a few degrees of motion in either direction. And so now that he works on his feet, so he's using it a lot, and it's starting to be painful all the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. Well, pilon fractures can be very devastating, and as you, it sounds like he had multiple fractures there. And so what can happen is when you decrease that range of motion at the ankle joint is it can start impacting other joints. So my suggestion would be for your little baby brother is to see a physical therapist and see what options there are. There may be some manual therapy or some mobilizations or some flexibility exercises that your brother can do on his own or with a good treatment program that may be able to get him a little bit more range of motion and perhaps buy him a little bit more time until you look at other surgical options or you kind of exhaust your conservative options. So I think a well-dedicated rehabilitation program is certainly within the realm of what's appropriate.
Yeah. Good luck, Scott, and good luck to your brother. Thank you so much. Will a bone break or that kind of – can that lead to bursitis, by the way, or is it?
Absolutely. So if there's a fracture, first of all, the fracture itself can irritate the bursa. Or if as a fracture is healed, if the alignment isn't perfect or you lay down scar formation a little bit differently, that can certainly irritate a bursa.
Well, let's take some more calls. Sarah in Zion, Illinois, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm pushing 55, and I've never had osteoarthritis before, and so I have this thing that I'm guessing that's what it is, but I just want to hear if you think it's normal. When I wake up for like the last 2-3 months, on the middle finger of both hands, right between the second and third joints, like on the distal end of my finger, mm-hmm. there's like intense pain in the middle of the joint. And it feels like it's coming from the bone. It hurts so much for like 5 minutes and it goes away. Now I can still feel it a little bit. Is that normal osteoarthritis?
So it's not hurting in the joint, but it's hurting between the joints? It's hurting in the bone?
Between the joints.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What position is your wrist, hand, and elbow when you're sleeping? Has there been any change with that? Do you notice what position you sleep in?
I haven't noticed any change at all.
And no numbness or tingling?
I'm looking at it.
Let us know if it answers you.
Right. You know, it's very tip does feel a tiny bit numb, but and only on my left hand. And I was playing the guitar yesterday. Maybe that's why it's feeling a little numb. Okay. But I don't normally play the guitar. So this isn't caused by the guitar.
Okay. Well, all right. We're not going to implicate the guitar. Please continue with the guitar. I'm wondering if you have a little paresthesia, if you're having a nerve entrapment or a nerve issue in that area that has to do with how you're sleeping.
But it's both hands?
Yeah.
It started in my left hand. Now it's in both hands.
Yeah. It could also be coming from your neck.
That's what I'm wondering,
also be something coming from your neck. So to answer your original question, no, it is not normal.
I don't think it sounds like arthritis.
It doesn't sound like arthritis. It doesn't fit a pattern of arthritis.
Right.
So I would go in and have somebody look at this so that they could examine your neck. They could examine your shoulder, your elbow, your wrist, and hand, because those are all suspects in the area of some sort of nerve entrapment that's creating these symptoms. And it's not unusual to have those symptoms when you wake up, because during the day as you're moving around, you keep that nerve and the nervous tissue moving and flexible. But during the night when you sit stationary, then that's when things tend to prop up, because you're not using them and moving them.
Wouldn't apply, I don't think, to Sarah, but I was thinking about my own finger. I had that sort of an issue with intense pain in one finger, and there was a tumor in the bone. And
wow.
Non-cancerous, mm-hmm. and the doctor took it out.
Did you have pain throughout the day, though, too, Larry? Did you have pain all the time?
Not all the time.
Okay.
I went in and sometimes I had pain and sometimes I didn't. It may have had to do with how I slept, too, for that matter. But it was removed and it was fine. Hers is going from one hand to the other. I can't imagine that's the issue.
Right, but it speaks to the fact that going in and having this looked at so someone can figure out what it is before it gets any worse, I think would be in your best interest.
Right.
Yep. Sarah, thank you so much. Good luck. Appreciate your call.
Let us know what they find.
Yeah. Right. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Oakwood Village, Prairie Ridge, dedicated to building community, announcing their campus expansion, growing to serve the Madison area. Information on the expansion is available at oakwoodvillage.net. Support also comes from the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, welcoming back duo pianists Jessica and Michael Shin, performing Haydn Symphony No. 58, March 22nd at Capitol Theater. WCOconcerts.org.
Thanks so much for being with us today, taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues. We've zeroed in a bit on bursitis with our two guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, who come by every month about at this time to talk with you about all kinds of issues. And certainly if you have a question, bursitis, but others as well, give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And let's go to Roger in Madison next. Roger, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for the program. I have been struggling with a hot spot on the sole of my foot, right behind the pinky toe, underneath that metatarsal. And I noticed from looking at medical artwork that there's a bursa there that goes all the way across the ball of the foot. Does that entire bursa usually get aggravated, or can just a small area of it get aggravated? Because a small area is what I've been dealing with. I've got a hot spot that just comes and goes.
Okay. So in answer to your question, no, you don't typically inflame just a part of the bursa. It is a fluid-filled sac, so if you irritate it, you're generally going to have irritation in the whole thing.
But having said that, because of the arch of your foot, you may load your pinky toe more and your first toe more, because there's an arch that goes across those metatarsal heads. And so you could perhaps feel it more under there because you're weight bearing, but the whole bursa would be irritated.
Right. So I have never seen bursitis in your metatarsal arch ever. So my guess is that it's probably something else. And, you know, my first guess is that you can have arthritis in that joint, in that tarsal metatarsal joint. It's not very common in the pinky unless you have what we call a really cavus foot. And that's a really high arch where you bear more of your weight on the outside of your foot. The other thing we think about in the fifth metatarsal is a stress fracture, although that's not usually under the ball of your foot. It's usually farther along the shaft of the bone. Those are things that happen on the pinky side of the foot. Tell us a little bit more about your symptoms. What brings it on? What relieves it?
I do a lot of walking and hiking and dancing and run some. And there are times when I do a fair bit of that, but it doesn't. But I haven't been able to pin it down to a particular pair of shoes or anything like that. And I'm pretty careful about what kind of shoes I put on my feet.
Okay.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're really active, and particularly if you're dancing, which tends to involve more work on the ball of your foot, depending upon the kind of dancer that you are. So you may want to go on and have this looked at, because it's not a typical garden variety presentation, and just see if there's something about your foot mechanics, about how you walk, how you move, about some joints in your foot that may be too mobile or some that are too immobile that you could work on to help relieve the stress in the area of that little toe.
Good luck, Roger. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Linda in Sheboygan a chance to join in. Linda, hello to you.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I am wondering if the ladies can give me a bit of advice. I have a chronic illness called chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, and it has affected the nerves, particularly in my legs. I've been working with a physical therapist for about a year, and I have a lot more strength, and I can do a lot more than I could last year. I initially went to the doctor because my knee was bothering me so bad, and sure enough, I do need a knee replacement, but they don't want to do it until nerves are really healed from this other illness, because they said the outcome would probably be not good.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, I'm wondering, where do I go from here? I mean, I will be seeing my neurologist very soon. Is he the one that's going to say, yes, you can go ahead with a knee replacement, or
yeah, or what else?
Right. So it sounds like you've been working very hard in physical therapy, Linda, and getting a lot of strength back, which is really important. I'm glad you're seeing your neurologist relatively soon. I would say that your neurologist is going to be the person who's going to ultimately make that decision regarding where you are with regards to the healing process with your nerves. So that, in concert with your physical therapist, helping you decide if you have regained all the strength that you can prior to having your knee replacement, would be most advised. So A, your nerves being at an optimal place, and then B, you being as strong as you possibly can be before you have your knee replacement to have a better outcome. So I would say you kind of have those two goals in concert, if you will. Both things need to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So even if if they decide to discontinue physical therapy because you've, you know, reached mm-hmm. the point of healing, they say, you've got to keep up that program. So figure out what works to keep making gains and to maintain the gains that you've already made.
And good luck. Thank you, Linda, for calling. And Sue in Brookfield, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to give a cheerleader's type cheer for all PTs because I was uncomfortable for about 4 years and couldn't get around. Went to an orthopedic and he said, it's not your hip, it's your knee. And I have gone for, I think, six sessions so far. And I don't understand why there's not a line out the door of people waiting to get in. They do such great work.
So what did they decide was wrong with your knee?
Well, The orthopedic doctor never told me what was wrong with my knee. He said, you just need to get that. You don't need a knee replacement. You just need to get movement. I walked 2 hours a day with my dog at the park, and everything was so tightened up. And I mean, from my hip all the way to practically my ankle. And she worked on all three sections, I guess I could say. Would that be three sections?
Uh-huh.
My knee,
mm-hmm.
my thigh,
yep.
and my...
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it didn't feel great the first few times.
No.
But I felt great after I walked out the door. And now I'll keep doing the exercises, and it's like a miracle. And I'm almost 80 years old, so I did not want to be confined like this for the rest of my life, however long it
sure.
is.
Sure, sure.
Absolutely.
Well, that's thank you for that call, Sue. You know, a lot of people will ask, well, I have arthritis. Does physical therapy change arthritis? Why do I go to physical therapy if it can't change my arthritis? But a lot of times we see people who have, you know, bad arthritis, but don't have very bad symptoms. And we also see people who have not very bad arthritis, but have a lot of symptoms. So we treat the weakness, the immobility, as Sue talked about. You know, you have a little bit of pain, so you start limping, and then your hip starts to hurt, and then you change how you move, so you lose motion at your joints, and the whole thing starts to snowball. And so we start unraveling that and taking it apart piece by piece and restoring your motion and restoring your strength and getting you back to where you were before, despite having arthritis. People function at very high levels,
right,
even with arthritis.
And your compliance is an essential, absolute essential part of any rehabilitation program is the patient needs to make sure that they're doing their part. And clearly it sounds like Sue is.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sue. I appreciate your call. I want to give Tom in Buffalo County a chance to join in. Tom, hi to you.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I've had pain in my left shoulder develop over the last 6 weeks to 2 months. And I've never had this before. My left shoulder has always been my good one. Anyway, I'm 70 years old, but I'm spending now a great deal of time sitting at my desktop computer for hours on end, and I'm just wondering if this shoulder could just be due to the fact the way I'm sitting here.
Do you
and that causing something?
Do you mouse with your right or your left hand, Tom?
With my right hand.
You mouse with your right hand. Okay. So are you typing with your left hand, or what position is your left arm in?
I don't generally do any typing, so
okay.
It's using the mouse.
Okay.
And I'm sitting in this old antique office chair mm-hmm. that's doesn't recline or anything. But
okay. So the computer work, is that a change in your activity level?
Yeah, I didn't used to spend this much time on the computer.
So may I ask what you were doing instead?
Oh, I don't know. Just doing work around the house. And
so being
okay.
being active,
right? So
and this year with the snowfall,
right?
Sort of
right.
Become more sedentary,
right? So one of the things you're seeing is the sequelae of being more sedentary. So when you're up and moving around and using your shoulder for your routine daily activities, whatever puttering things you're doing, it helps keep everything strong and mobile. But then when you're just sitting, that doesn't happen. And so your shoulder and your neck, because it's also possible this could mm-hmm. be coming from your neck, accommodate to your activity level. So when you spend 6-8 weeks sitting at a computer instead of 6 to 8 weeks up and moving around, those tissues accommodate to that and you lose mobility and you lose strength. So it's time to get moving again. It's not clear if this is a primary shoulder problem or a neck problem, but you could go in and have this looked at and someone could sort that out for you.
Absolutely. And then making recommendations regarding your seated posture at your computer. So you say you're in an older chair, but regardless of that, is it set to the appropriate height? Is your arm resting at an appropriate height? Perhaps your arm is kind of hanging and pulling down on your shoulder. Maybe it's putting your neck in a poor position. So making sure that you are adjusted to an appropriate height while you're at your computer. Then the other big thing is taking frequent breaks while you're at that computer. Setting an alarm or a timer.
I was just going to bring that up with you to see. You really need to get up and away.
Absolutely. Lori's favorite line is when we're driving, she always drinks a lot of water. And she says, when we have to stop and get gas, empty one tank and fill another. And that's what you do. So if you have a lot of water or drink frequently or while you're on your computer, Tom, then you have to get up and move and use the restroom. And that will get you moving a little bit. So taking frequent breaks is really important.
And good luck. And thanks, Tom, for calling. Appreciate your call. I can empathize with you on the right. weather because
yes.
I've been hard on me too, actually.
Yes, it's tough. Mm-hmm.
So I know the feeling. Bob in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I'm in my mid-60s, and in early January, I was playing pickleball, of all things.
Love it.
And, it was a great game. I had just started it, and I injured my arm. And I waited a few weeks and went in to my main doc, and he said, I have tennis elbow. Mm-hmm. And he gave me some basic PT exercises. Mm-hmm. And so I've been doing those. I also got a strap.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Tennis elbow strap.
Also use. So at this point, it still hasn't gone away, and mm-hmm. so I'm just wondering if I should be waiting longer Mm-mm. for this to heal, or if there's some other things that I should do.
Yeah, I think seeing a PT is definitely in order. And part of why I'm mentioning this is because with pickleball, there's a lot of neck extension. And so you could have a little combination going on where actually because of gripping the paddle, you may have a little irritation of those muscles where we classically think of it as tennis elbow. But you could also have a little bit of a contribution from your neck or your cervical spine. So you want to make sure that you have both of those things taken care of. And we hate to keep you out of pickleball. So some very specific flexibility exercises and some strengthening for those tendons, specifically eccentric strengthening, is a helpful strategy. And then just making sure that there aren't any contributions from your neck, or if there are, to make sure that those are managed appropriately, because a lot of pickleball is overhead when you're up close to the kitchen, right?
Yeah, there you go. And just speaking of pickleball, Sue emailed that she was playing pickleball and she fell and she was sore for a few weeks. She had a compression fracture in her spine. Since then, her left hip has been extremely sore. Lately, she can't even put her sock on because crossing her leg is so painful. She thinks she has bursitis and looking for some exercises to help ease the pain. She can't even lay on her side and do a leg lift.
Wow. Yeah, that's a significant injury, not only from the fall, but the fact that she had a compression fracture in her spine. So the question is that weakness and pain in her hip truly coming from her hip, or is it coming from her low back where her compression fracture was?
Right. This is not something that you can assume is bursitis and treat it as such. If you had a compression fracture, well, let's back up. If you had a fall significant enough to sustain a compression fracture, you probably injured your soft tissue as well. And so you need the guidance of a physical therapist to get you back off of the couch, get you moving, get you able to put your shoes and socks back on, and get you back up playing pickleball. So you need to see a physical therapist and get the right treatment to get you on the right track. Right. I would not assume that this is a bursitis.
Right.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for that question. Margot in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Margot.
Hello. I have two quick questions. The first one is in regards to plantar fasciitis. I have had it in my right foot 2 years ago. I now have it in my left foot, and I am going to succumb to buying custom orthotics. Where is the best place to buy them, through the doctor or like a good feed store? And my second question is I am starting to get in the base of my thumbs, when I do a lot of gripping exercises like lifting weight or gardening, I'm starting to get a bump at the base of my thumb that gets very tender. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what that is.
All right. Well, we'll start with the second one because that's pretty easy. That's probably carpal metacarpal osteoarthritis. It's one of the most common sites of arthritis. People think of arthritis in your hips and knees, but actually the base of your thumb is one of the most common sites.
Especially in women.
Right. So seeing a hand therapist would help with maybe some specific hand exercises and a conversation about tools. They can direct you to tools that are more ergonomic and put less stress on that joint. And then to the plantar fasciitis question, have you tried over-the-counter insoles?
Yeah, and they're not cutting it.
Okay, so what makes you think that a custom one would?
Because that's what the podiatrist said.
Okay.
Did you have physical therapy for your plantar fasciitis the first go around, Margo?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And the second one I did not, but I did actually have in early December, I had a cortisone shot, which extremely helped the situation. Then we went on vacation and I walked barefoot on the beach, and that was really not a bad thing to do. So people don't do that.
Yeah.
But now it's back to square one on this thing.
Oh, have you tried night splints?
Yeah, and I can't sleep in them.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a lot of issues too.
Okay. Well, if your podiatrist recommended them, I would start with the podiatrist. Many podiatrists make custom orthotics, or they have someone that they work with.
Yeah. I think I'd.
That's probably where I
follow that advice.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because usually they would write a prescription of a certain posting, varus, valgus, rear foot, forefoot. They'd have a special prescription for what they would want for you.
Right. And if your podiatrist doesn't make it, if you want to stay on the line and have our producer Jill get your information, there is a physical therapist up in on Alaska who specializes in lower leg, ankle, foot. And I'm not sure if he makes orthotics, but if he doesn't, he would know who would. So if your podiatrist doesn't, you want another name, I can provide that for you.
There you go. And Margot, thanks so much. Dave in Reedstown emailed to say that suggesting people be seen by a medical professional isn't possible always for those who are either uninsured or underinsured and can't afford to go to a doctor, much less a specialist. Wonders what's your advice for uninsured or underinsured people, what are they supposed to do?
Right. Well, you know, Wisconsin is very rural, and so we do have a lot of people who have very limited access to healthcare professionals or, due to insurance, cannot seek the care of a healthcare professional. Many times people will turn to the internet for that, and that's okay as long as your sources on the internet are good, valid, reliable sources. So if you do have a medical condition and you're looking to seek help and you choose to use the internet, make sure you go to a reputable website, such as the Mayo Foundation has a very good website that has a lot of good information on it. WebMD is commonly used. That's another one.
WebMD, okay. Mm-hmm.
The other option is to call your local healthcare facility, and they often have a pay scale, a sliding pay scale for people who are paying cash or for people who are on a limited income. So I know at UW they will work with you in the billing department if you do have limited resources and figure out a way to get you the health care that you need. So
the other thing is, as Lori said, if you do use a facility and you see a healthcare professional and they understand that you are limited in the number of visits in which you want to come in, many healthcare professionals will work with you to educate you, to teach you how to progress yourself and progress exercises or activities.
Right, right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
There you go. Thank you so much for that
that
comment, Dave.
Right, very that's good comment, point. Dave. We mm-hmm. appreciate it.
Gene and Melrose will turn to you next. Gene, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. I had my right hip replaced 2.5. Ever since I've been, well, for the last year and a half now, say if I bend over to, pick up a paper or scoop up the cat litter box or put the collar on the dog, when I go to stand up, it's like, ooh, you got to wiggle back and forth in order to get upright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. All right.
What's going on there, Laura?
Well, my guess would be since he's had two joint replacements on the right-hand side that he has probably some arthritis, probably a little wear and tear in many of his joints. And sounds to me like now it's his back that's given him some trouble. So the bending over and having a little bit of trouble getting back up. Once you have those joint replacements, particularly on the same side, you're going to lose mobility, you're going to lose motion, and you're going to lose strength on that side. So the typical pattern is you move the load from one joint onto the next. So he had a knee replacement, and as he recovered from his knee replacement, he made his hip do more work because his knee wasn't quite up to snuff. Then he wore out his hip. Then he got a hip replacement. So now you've transferred that load up onto your back. So I would see a physical therapist if you can, maybe for just one or two visits, and get some exercises to help strengthen your back and keep your back from wearing out. Because however you're moving,
right,
because of your previous joint replacements on the right side, you are now overloading your back, and you will end up at some point with back surgery if you don't take some precautions now to change the way you move. And a PT can examine you, look at your mobility in your hip, knee, your pelvis, your back, and help give you some exercises and activities to protect your back.
Good luck, Gene. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. And Helen in Big Bend, we turn to you next. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Years ago, I had plantar fasciitis, and I went to my doctor, and she was going to have me take ibuprofen or something for the pain. And I said, well, will I have to be on that forever? And she said, well, not if you got yourself a decent shoe. And I said, well, what would that be? She said, well, something like a Birkenstock. So I did, and I've never had problems since with it.
That's great. Yeah, it's very important that your foot matches your shoe, or your shoe matches your foot. So Birkenstocks are a very good, reliable brand. They work for some people. For other people, they don't. But making sure that the footwear you're in meets the position of your foot or the anatomy of your foot is really important. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
the Birkenstocks are one brand that tend to have a pretty well-established arch support,
right,
that's built in. Many other shoes, even athletic shoes, mm-hmm, even though it looks like they have an arch support in it, if you pull that little insole out and take your finger, it takes about 3 ounces of pressure to flatten that thing. So you can imagine if you're walking, you're flattening that arch right out.
Right.
So having a substantive arch that will maintain when you weight bear on it is really important.
Mm-hmm.
One area where I tend to go more money,
yeah,
if if it's at all possible, you want good shoes.
Shoes should mm-hmm. be an investment, and especially if you're on your feet a lot, you know, walking, things like that. You wanna buy a pair of shoes that shouldn't need to be broken in. You should mm-hmm. leave the store and they should be comfortable. So a lot of people say, well, you know, it'll break in and that will be fine. Your shoe should fit you well when you leave the store.
Yeah, it is. It will help keep you out of our office right. generally if you invest in a good pair of shoes and change them out. Even if they don't look worn out, a lot of times the right. mechanical properties of the shoe wear out ahead of time. And then that message for all those teenagers who should be in school, and that is you have to untie your shoes. You cannot take your shoes and on and off, just slipping them on and off without untying them, because you break down the counter on the back of the shoe. And as goes the back of the shoe, so goes the rest
everything.
Of your foot. So if the counter is broken down, even if it has a lovely arch support, you will roll right over the top of it. It won't be effective.
Right. I used to work in a shoe store, and people would come in and say, these shoes just fell apart so quickly. And they'd come in and they'd hand them to us, and the shoes would still be tied, mm-hmm. which means that's exactly how people were taking mm-hmm. them off. So,
Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today from the University of Wisconsin. Lori, a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today with our two guests. We started with bursitis, and we're still certainly taking questions in that area, but other physical therapy issues as well. You can join in one open line at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Diana in Douglas County. Hi, Diana.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I have a question. Well, I was told by my regular doctor that I have polyomyalgia rheumatica after she found out my SED rate tested at 104. It's supposed to be below 30. So ooh. She put me on prednisone.
Sure she did.
And then she tapered me down every time. I was fine on prednisone at 30. You said, whoa, was that high for SED rate?
That's a very yes. high SED mm-hmm. rate, yes. That's a very high
what
SED
is,
rate.
What is SED rate?
Go ahead.
The sedimentation rate. It's one of the standard tests they do to screen for rheumatologic diseases.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so you're on how much
yes.
prednisone
how much
are you on
now?
Right, Diana?
Actually, she keeps tapering me off.
Good. That's the right way to go. You want to find the lowest dosage that you can function at, because you don't want to being on high doses of cortisone is not good for your body. So a good rheumatologist will do exactly that, to very gradually taper you down to the lowest level you can manage and still be comfortable. So where are you at currently?
Well, right now I'm at about 7.5 milligrams.
Oh, that's good.
That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But the pain, and now I know, well, I'm going to be on 5
okay.
in 2 days. 5 I feel pretty good at.
Okay.
But then she has me go down to 2.5, mm-hmm. and that's when my muscles, I can hardly walk, and my arms. I would like, I keep telling her, I'd like to have 5 milligrams a day for the rest of my life. I'm over 82. Mm-hmm. Is that a high rate, 5 milligrams, for an older person like
no.
me?
No.
I think 5 milligrams is, it's a low rate, and if that keeps you mobile and moving, I think that sounds like that would be a reasonable dosage. And I think one of the questions you had asked when you called in was if physical therapy could help you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Help. Better than But see, when I get down to 2.5 milligrams, I can hardly move.
Right,
I can hardly
get out of bed. Yeah, that's no good. And I think, as Jill said, the trade-off is well worth it to take that extra 2.5 milligrams so you can get up and move and be active.
Right. And even on 5 milligrams, the question is if you saw a physical therapist and got provided some strengthening exercises and some mobility exercises, would that be a good combination to prevent you from going to having to need a higher dosage at some point? And I think a well-designed rehabilitation program, a few exercises that you do daily to keep you mobile might be a good strategy for you in addition to your 5 milligram dose.
There you go. Right. Good luck, Diana. So just say, no, I want 5. Well, not 2.5.
This is a really good way to taper down, though. And I think Diana found kind of that point where this is too low and I can function much, much better in that next higher dose.
Right.
Makes good sense.
Right. Yeah.
Thanks, Diana. Mary in Brookfield, your turn.
Hello. I also had a comment for the woman who is going to get the fitted orthotics. Mm-hmm. And I had plantar fasciitis plus tore both PT tendons on both of my inner arch. So I completely lost my arch. I spent $400 for 2 different pairs, 2 different places that cast my foot. It was awful. And then I went to the walking company, and, you know, they monitor those orthotics, plus their return policy is really great. Mm. And I was just saying for that woman, maybe start there first, because she maybe could save herself a lot of money. Plus, switching out your shoes really helps. Like, I wear Ortho heels at home. You know, they're like a built-in orthotic in a flip-flop, and they, like, saved my life, really. Mm. But it is really a process of, like the woman earlier said, about finding shoes that work. And then with these orthotics, if it's Ortho Heel or whoever the new shoe is, you can't wear them a whole day. You have to give yourself, like, an hour one day, then the next day another extra hour. You have to build up. But she could maybe save herself a lot of money just by going to the walking company.
Yeah. Those are great suggestions, and I 100% agree with you. Anytime you get a new orthotic or something like that, you have to kind of break those devices in slowly.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary. Appreciate it. And Steve in Madison, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am 57, have been active all my life. In August, I went in for a flare up with my hip. While being evaluated for that, the physical therapist was moving my leg and tore a meniscus in my knee. So I have all my meniscuses are torn in my knees. Been diagnosed needing 2 knee replacements. We've kind of stabilized that with cortisone in one knee and the synthetic joint fluid in the other knee. And about 6 weeks ago, the issue seems to have migrated into my feet and ankles. And I now have tremendous pain, swelling, broken blood vessels, etc., in the tops of my feet, on both feet. And I, most of the time, I'm walking like Frankenstein. So I am just really struggling. And I've lost about 25 pounds of muscle out of my glutes and thighs by just being inactive for so long. I can't bike. I can barely walk.
Yeah.
So who's managing this problem for you?
Well, I'm going to a local health facility, and we're not having a lot of luck with diagnosis. It's kind of a pasta on the wall approach.
So have you seen a rheumatologist or had any blood work, or have they looked at any systemic type of condition with you, Steve?
I have not seen a rheumatologist. We've done blood work. They've ruled out diabetes and that type of thing. And I'm wondering if, I don't know much about,
psoriatic arthritis.
Yeah, psoriatic arthritis versus regular arthritis. I have the I have regular arthritis, and I have some skin issues. So anything you can advise me there as well.
So when they did blood work, did they do a rheumatologic panel? Did they look at things like sed rate
and your RH factor?
I do not know.
Okay.
I don't believe so.
You might want to advocate for seeing a rheumatologist because it's feeling a little more systemic. So osteoarthritis will affect, usually a single joint. The fact that you need two knee replacements tells me that either you were given really bad joints or there's more of a systemic issue going on now that you have a hip problem and your feet and ankles and you're having broken blood vessels, which sounds like an underlying connective tissue problem. So I'm kind of feeling like the next step would be to see rheumatology and see if they have any answers for you.
Absolutely. I agree.
Good luck, Steve. And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Mike in Trempealeau next. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Very good shows.
Thank you.
Okay. On Thursday, I was loading groceries from a cart into a pickup. I was facing the driver's side door from the passenger side. The pavement was dry. I put some groceries from the cart into the pickup, and I twisted my upper body to get some more groceries out of the cart, and I felt a pop in my left kneecap.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a little bit tender since then. I do have basically the full range of motion that I did before, but just occasionally it's got a little bit of pain with it.
Is it mostly under your kneecap, Mike, or is it deeper?
It feels mostly under the kneecap.
Good. Any swelling?
Very little, if any.
Okay. All right.
All right.
So it sounds like you maybe just scuffed the undersurface of your kneecap with that twist. You probably have a little arthritis underneath there, and you caught it on something and popped it. The classic plant and twist would be a meniscus injury, but the other symptoms that you described don't sound like a meniscus. They sound more like a kneecap.
Right.
So I would ice it and try to keep moving it.
Right. And it should get better relatively quickly.
And if not, you should go in and see someone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you so much, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum will be with us up right up to 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. So you stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guests, physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. Great to have them with us today. Certainly, if you have questions as we move along here, aches or pains or sprains or strains, or we started on bursitis, and certainly if you have questions in that area, we welcome them. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll take a call from Elizabeth, and then we'll go to emails, one from Sean. So let's go to Elizabeth first. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about what I thought was my hip. I went to the doctor and said that my hip hurt, and I couldn't go upstairs just the way you should. I had to go one step at a time. And he had me do some exercise with my legs, and he said, no, it's not your hip. You have bursitis in something. It was forward from the hip, but I don't remember the term he used. My question is, what kind of exercises could I do? He said put heat on it, but are there any exercises that I could do that would help mitigate that pain and maybe get rid of it?
Did he say you had iliopsoas bursitis?
I honestly don't know.
Okay. Where is your pain?
I don't remember.
Where is your pain, Elizabeth?
Well, from my hip joint forward, it would be, maybe 4 or 5 inches. I really can't tell.
Is it in the front? It's in the front?
No.
It's on the side?
It's on the side.
Oh, okay. So trochanteric bursitis.
Okay.
What did you call it?
Trochanteric.
Okay.
That's the most likely culprit on the outside. So just a primer on hip pain. So pain that is hip pain that's in your groin is usually your hip joint itself. Pain that's on the outside of your hip, the most common culprit is trochanteric bursitis. Pain in the back of your hip, down in your buttocks, either piriformis or coming from your back.
Low back, right?
From your low back. So that's kind of where we start when people come in with hip pain. So in terms of trochanteric bursitis.
So a good flexibility and strengthening program so you're not loading that hip inappropriately would be good. So I think it would be worthwhile, Elizabeth, if you could, to see a physical therapist and get a few exercises to make sure that you have adequate mobility in your hips, and then make sure that those muscles surrounding your hip joint are strong enough so when you go up those steps, you're not pushing on the bursa too much or using faulty mechanics where you're irritating that bursa. I would also avoid sitting with your legs crossed because that can irritate that bursa as well. So when you're sitting in a chair, make sure your knees are pointing straight ahead.
Right. So the key was when you're going up the stairs and having pain going up the stairs tells me that you're not using your glute muscles, your hip muscles, the way you should to go up and down the stairs. And as a result of that, you're irritating that bursa on the outside of your hip. So a physical therapist will look at how you go up and down the stairs, and they'll look at the strength and mobility in your hips, and then give you some very specific exercises to target the muscles that are the cause of the problem.
Good luck, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to that email from Sean. She fell on some black ice last winter, was told she tore a hip tendon and had some muscle tears. She didn't have surgery, saw a PT, and he told her to rest the area and do just a few exercises, clamshells, for example, as the area was pretty irritated. Still a little sore, and she's having trouble sleeping on that side. She does take some ibuprofen a couple times a day, and that helps a little. What are your thoughts about cortisone injections? What are the side effects? This winter, she tore her knee muscle, meniscus, on the other leg. PT's been a big help, but knee is still somewhat swollen.
So it sounds to me like she's debating about whether she should get a cortisone injection in her hip from last year. That's kind of how I'm understanding
that's
this.
That's my read as well.
Right. And so it sounds like she had a little bit of physical therapy for her hip when she initially injured it, but it doesn't sound like she's, now that it's very calmed down, had a good comprehensive hip rehab program.
Right. So whatever she was doing at the beginning, the clamshells would be the ideal exercise to work on those gluteal muscles that she probably tore, probably glute medius, and some of that if she landed on the outside of her hip and probably really annoyed that bursa at the same time. So seeing a PT, and I don't know if this is the same PT she's seeing for her knee, but she needs some she needs her program progressed for her hip.
Right.
So that's one thing. The second question about cortisone, there are systemic side effects even of a localized cortisone injection, but if you're doing, you know, basically a one and done injection, there's not a big downside to that. And cortisone injections do help a great deal, I think, as we've heard from a few people today.
Yeah.
In that bursa, particularly the trochanteric bursa, it's very superficial.
Right.
On the outside of your hip. It's pretty easy to do. They'll often do it under fluoroscopy to make sure they get the cortisone into that bursa. And that can really open the door for the rehabilitation. A lot
right.
of times people have too much pain to actually do the exercises that they need to
right.
do to get better. And so a well-timed cortisone injection can kind of beat back the inflammation in that bursa and open the door so that you can start to progress your rehabilitation program.
Right. And just because Lori said, you know, cortisone injection is a good thing, you have to think very carefully about exactly where this cortisone injection is going. So we're not talking about it going deep within the hip joint. We're talking about going in a superficial contained bursa. And so the side effects of injecting cortisone into a bursa are much, much, much lower than if you're trying to inject it into a joint per se. So not only do you have to consider the timing of it, but you also have to consider where they're considering putting this cortisone. In this case, like Lori said, putting it in a bursa, which is very superficial to get Sean moving again, sounds like a good strategy.
Let's go to Judy in Oconomowoc next. Hi, Judy. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. For a few years now, every once in a while, maybe once a year, I would have a pain in my hip. And I never didn't go to a doctor. I just would do a few exercises, and I have a cream that I put on it, and it would go away. Last year, when it happened, it took a little bit longer for it to go away. And this year, now I ended up going to the doctor. I've had x-rays, found out my spine is not real straight, and I have scoliosis, and also probably a little bit of arthritis in my tailbone, although that doesn't seem to bother me. But I'm going to a physical therapist, and I've gotten exercises, which I've been doing, and it's getting better. But I'm still experiencing in the morning when I get up, usually I have a very difficult time walking because it hurts. But lately, when I continue to walk, I can get rid of it. I'm not able to sit in a comfortable chair. I've been sitting on a ball. I have a big ball that I've been sitting on, or on a kitchen chair with a pad on it. And I'm wondering, now this has been going on for about almost 2 months. And I'm just wondering, when I had the x-ray, they said I might have to have an MRI to find out more. I'm wondering if it's starting to get better, but I'm wondering if I should do that MRI or if I should just continue the way I am.
That's a great question, Judy. Really good question. So the general rule of thumb is you obtain an MRI when you are ready to take the next step in terms of your intervention program. So typically the first step is physical therapy to see how much progress you can make. As long as you are still making progress, I would continue with that program because you don't know what the end point is. You may achieve an end point where you're comfortable. You're able to do the things you want to do. You maybe have to modify a little bit, sit, stand, etc. But you're basically comfortable with where you're at. Typically, you get an MRI when you're going to take the next step, which is usually injections. So they'll do an epidural, facet injection, etc., to calm down the area where you're having sciatic symptoms. And they'll usually do that when the pain is really incapacitating to some extent. You're not able to do the things you want to do. You're having to take a lot of pain medication during the day, etc. So that's usually when you get the MRI. In terms of your discomfort first thing in the morning, that's a fairly typical complaint because you haven't been moving around and your joints are stiff. It takes a while to get them moving again. So I don't know how old your mattress is, but you could think about replacing your mattress or talk to your physical therapist about how to accommodate your sleeping positions to unload your back.
Right, especially with your scoliosis, if you have some slight scoliosis. If your piriformis is tight, have they talked about your piriformis at all, Judy?
We have. Okay, good.
Yeah. I'm sure you have.
So nice you've talked about your piriformis.
So that can be, you know, part of the issue with the sciatica. And if you sleep and it gets shortened at night or kind of compresses your sciatic nerve, that can be a problem as well. The other issue with getting the MRI, just going back to what Lori said, is there are many, 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 many what we call incidental findings on an MRI. So if we MRI'd everybody in a room, probably half of us would have herniated discs, but no symptoms. And so you have to be a little careful with those things. And so I agree with Lori. Once you kind of reach a plateau with regards to your rehabilitation, if you haven't gotten where you need to go, then I think getting an MRI and seeing what else could potentially kind of get you over that hump is a good strategy. But you had mentioned that you had an x-ray and that you have a little bit of osteoarthritis on your tailbone, but it doesn't really create any pain. So that's a very interesting thing. So here's a case where there's some visible changes on a plain radiograph, yet you have no symptoms with it. So it's always important that we remember that our patients are more than just their images, and that you kind of look at the patient as a whole, and the imaging is just one more piece of information that we have when it comes time to make decisions about plans of care.
There you go, Judy. Thank you so much for calling. Amber slipped down a couple of stairs in February 1st, and fell mostly on her rear end. That happened to a friend of mine, too. The actual bruise has gone away, but 6 weeks later, it still feels bruised and is something quite painful, especially when she sits for a long time. She walks every day, generally healthy, in her early 40s. She didn't go to the doctor for this fall. At this point, should she just wait more, or is there something else she should be doing?
So if she landed right on her tailbone or her coccyx, and she ended up with a little bit of a bone bruise, that would explain why, even though there's no physical bruising on the skin, she's still having symptoms, because if she did kind of irritate the lining of the bone, the periosteum of the bone, that can be very, very painful, and that would definitely make sitting more difficult.
So, and also, it depends upon how she landed. She said she landed on her rear, so the question is, did her tailbone take most of it, or did her glute muscles take most of it? In which case, she would have generally landed right on her piriformis for the most part. And sometimes that, because the sciatic nerve travels there, it can just be painful to sit on it. So if she hasn't done any specific exercises to stretch her glute muscles and to do some strengthening exercises for her glutes, like the clams or the fire hydrants or those kinds of things, I'd give those a try, a little bit of stretching and strengthening specifically for those muscles, thinking, oh, I bruised my muscles, I need to re-strengthen them. Just walking alone is not going to do that. So I would try some of those strengthening exercises. And if she's still really having trouble and not turning the corner, she could see someone and get a more definitive treatment plan.
Mm-hmm. Pat in Oconomowoc has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Pat.
Hi. The question I got is, I tore my rectus femoris about 2.5 inches north of my knee. And it separated about 2.75 inches away from each other. The problem I got is I went to physical therapy and all this other stuff, but the top part seems to be moving just a little bit, and it becomes a big ball when I start using the muscle. There's nothing we can do to that, can we?
So you had a complete tear and you did not have it surgically repaired, is that correct?
Well, the doctor told me that if I surgically repaired it, because it was 2.5 inches north of the knee where it broke, mm-hmm. and then it separated,
mm-hmm.
that if he put it together, tried to sew it, to pull it down and sew it together, mm-hmm. all you'd have to do is bend and you'd rip it right apart.
Yeah. So you separated so far. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I'd say that there's not much you can do when you fire that muscle. It's just like when you have a biceps, long head of the biceps rupture, or they do a biceps
tenodesis,
where it'll just roll up like a window shade. So that's what happens, is you fire the muscle, it rolls up like a window shade. So I don't know that there's much that you can do about that.
Not. You have some other muscles that flex your knee and extend your knee, and you'll rely a little bit more on those. Can I ask how you did it?
Took a turn on a football game.
How old are you? Were you when this happened?
62.
Love it. Yeah.
So the reason I asked that is because the rectus femoris, or quad tendon rupture, is a little bit more common as we age. And so Pat has sustained a complete tear. And when those fibers are so far apart, which is what he's describing, surgical intervention to kind of put those back together becomes almost impossible because, like Lori said, it just rolled up like a window shade.
Is that what Bill Clinton did? Did he have a quad
tendon? Yes, he did. He caught his toe going up on a stage, and he completely tore his quadriceps tendon while he was president.
Yeah, so you're in good company, Pat.
There you go. Wow. Is it, it's got to inhibit exercise. And so the pool, is a pool better for something like that or not?
I don't know that it matters. It's wherever he's comfortable. So biking is going to be good. I wouldn't do a lot of running or impact stuff, but biking and rowing would both be good for that.
Yeah. Okay.
So there you go, Pat. Thank you so much. Let's turn to Nancy in Madison. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm having a lot of mid-back pain and right on the brow line, and I've had an MRI a year ago. I've been doing acupuncture and physical therapy injections. I've had CBD oil. I've had TENS units. I wear pain patches every day. And the pain only gets worse. There's nothing I do that isn't painful. Nothing. And my diagnosis was extensive degeneration with modic end-plate edema. Mm-hmm. But I have seen the therapist, and then they said, well, don't do it. I did a month in the pool, every day in the pool, and it feels good in it, but it has no lasting effect. I've had injections in that area, but I am just, I'm in pain all the time.
Have they talked about an implanted pain device or a stimulator of some sort of like that in your spine at all?
They said they don't do that in the mid-back.
Oh, right. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So you've been to the pain clinic?
I've been to UW Spine Clinic.
Okay. Have you been to the pain clinic, though?
No.
Well, that might be an option for you. So, you know, when people clearly have an orthopedic spine issue that, like, you've identified, then they usually start with an orthopedic approach. And it sounds like you've had that. You've had the pool therapy. You've had strengthening. You've had injections and so on. And if you're still having trouble, we often suggest that people see the specialist at the pain clinic. And they are the people who help patients manage their pain. And they will talk about medications or any other interventions that they think might be appropriate to help you manage your pain. So if you haven't been there, I would suggest that as your next step. It sounds like you've pretty much exhausted the traditional interventions for this kind of a problem.
So on your way to the pain clinic, Nancy, and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peggy, what's on your mind today?
Thanks. I love the show. Thank you so much for providing such great information. My husband, 60 years old, just turned, last year started having foot pain. He's got a very high arch. And he went to not the walking store, but a store like that and got some orthotics for a trip we went on. Didn't seem to help. Finally saw a foot specialist, podiatrist, who said his metatarsal, that all that sponginess just, you know, below the ball of your foot was basically, you know, collapsed and causing a lot of pain whenever he walks. And so he's tried orthotics. And it doesn't seem to be getting better. I'm wondering if you lose that padding due to, I think it's due to mostly a very high arch. Does that ever come back? That padding under your
No.
Unfortunately, no. So that cushion is there for a reason. What's probably had it happen due to his high arch and the fact that he probably has a somewhat rigid foot is he probably really loaded those metatarsals throughout his life and probably kind of caused early wear and tear, if you will, on that padding system. And that doesn't come back, unfortunately.
Right. So then we just try to accommodate that,
right,
you know, by extra padding in the shoe. Sometimes a shoe with a rocker bottom is helpful because it helps smooth out that loading throughout the gait cycle. So just working with either a podiatry or a good shoe store to figure out ways to accommodate his loss of cushion would be key.
There you go, Peggy. Thank you so much for calling. And on that note, we are out of time. Jill, Lori, thank you both so much.
Oh, it's great being here. Thank you.
Awesome.
You're back on, let's see, April something.
April something.
Something. Sounds great. April, a Monday in April.
Yeah.
A Monday in April. All right. Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Tomorrow at 11, Mary Mellum will be back to talk about your taxes before they're due. So stay with us for that and stay with us right through the afternoon. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.